Who were these undercover assassins who moved in dressed as Muslim women in headscarves, dressed as doctors and hospital staff?
Well, it is clear that those who assassinated the three Palestinians in the hospitals are Israeli military group, special security group that is called the Arabists here. They usually act and dress as Palestinians in various places, and this is not the first crime they committed. But by the way, this same group was taking photographs with the Minister of Internal Security, the fascist Ben-Gvir, recently, and he published that photo, and he praised them as heroes. What they've done is really unacceptable and represents a very serious violation of international humanitarian law in four different issues. First of all, they dressed as doctors, as nurses, as health professionals, and they put one of them, one of the assassins, on a wheelchair and dragged him into the hospital. This way, they are endangering actually all medical personnel, because from now on, nobody will be sure that he's dealing with a doctor or somebody who's disguising as a doctor. Second, they penetrated the hospital in an illegal manner, very early, in the very early hours of the morning. And they have no right to enter the hospital without even notification and without any alarm. And in principle, they are not allowed to enter the hospital. Third, they attacked a patient who is handicapped, who is paralyzed, in his bed while he was sleeping, and shot him in the head, and shot two others who were accompanying him in the same room, three Palestinians, in an act that can only be called as an act of assassination and illegal execution of Palestinians. In every aspect of international humanitarian law, they have violated the law. They are continuing that. They are proud about it. They're praising themselves for doing it. And that is all happening because the world is allowing Israel to be impunitive to international law and impunitive to any law, as a matter of fact.
Well, Dr. Barghouti, I also wanted to ask you what's going on in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. More than 380 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli soldiers and civilians, and supposedly there is no Israeli military activity going on in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Could you talk about that other war that the rest of the world is not paying any attention to?
Yes, actually, Israel is reoccupying the whole of the West Bank. I mean, since the 7th of October, not only they've killed 380 people, but more than that, they are allowing settlers to wander around with guns. And these settlers are behaving as terrorists, terrorizing Palestinian people. And in addition to that, the Israeli army has arrested, since the 7th of October, 6,300 Palestinians in the West Bank, including no less than 200 children, including women. They kidnap people and they put them in jail without trial, without any legal process, without even charges. And in addition to that, they have divided the country in 224 small islands with 650 military checkpoints, each of which has become a point of harassment for people and a very dangerous spot because Palestinians could be killed for no reason. So, and the Palestinian Authority has lost any authority. Practically, Israel took over all of the West Bank, although West Bank is not under the government of Hamas, as they claim in regarding Gaza. But that's not the only thing. All these violations happen, and instead of punishing Israel or blaming Israel for its violations of international law, we see many Western governments, including the United States of America, punishing the Palestinians. And if you allow me to speak about that, I think the whole case of UNRWA was used by Israel to distract attention from the ICJ resolution, which indicted Israel for a plausible genocide. Instead of punishing Israel, they took up this case where Israel is claiming that some workers in UNRWA have been engaging in military actions without any proof, without investigation. And then you found 12 European countries and the United States of America and Canada and Japan cut off support to the only organization that is providing humanitarian aid to Gaza, that is the only bridge to humanitarian aid in Gaza. We are subjected to collective punishment. Palestinians, who are the victims of the Israeli aggression, of the possibility of a genocide, are subjected to collective punishment by these governments, none of whom have condemned this Israeli attack on the hospital.
I wanted to turn to a clip of the U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller at a briefing on Tuesday. He was being questioned about the Israeli raid on the Jenin hospital by the Associated Press reporter Matt Lee.
This operation that the Israelis launched in Jenin, the hospital today. What do you have any comment on that? Is this something that you think is problematic, or is it something that you look at with envy, like this is some kind of great Mission Impossible mission that we wish that we could also do?
So I'd say that we strongly urge caution whenever operations have the potential to impact civilians and civilian installations. That, of course, includes hospitals. We do recognize the very real security challenges Israel faces, and its legitimate right to defend its people and its territory from terrorism. Israel, of course, has the right to carry out operations to bring terrorists to justice, but those operations need to be conducted in full compliance with international humanitarian law.
Well, those operations include going into hospitals and murdering people in their beds, regardless of whether they're they are suspected or even known terrorists.
So,
is that okay with you guys?
So there was a lot in the premise of that question. Obviously, we did know that they went into...
Well, you don't think killed people who were completely innocent.
So let me say that
if you did think that, then you would be condemning it, right?
We certainly would, but I would say that Israel has said that these were Hamas operatives. They have said that one of them was carrying a gun at the time of the operation. So I'm not able to speak to the facts of the operation. You'd have to pass some kind of legal judgment, know all of the facts of the operation. But as a general matter, they do have the right to carry out operations to bring terrorists to justice, but they need to be conducted
including in hospitals.
So we want them to conduct their operations in compliance with international humanitarian law.
So that's U.S. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller being questioned by the AP's Matt Lee. Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, if you can respond to what he's saying specifically here, and also overall then talk about the attacks in West Bank and Gaza on the healthcare system, going right to Nasser Hospital, which is the largest hospital after Al-Shifa. It's in southern Gaza, and it has been under siege for the last few days. But start with the spokesperson.
There are many things to say here, but let me start by what he said about the proper legal process. Israelis should not have entered the hospital. They should not have disguised as doctors and nurses. This is all violation of international humanitarian law. But even if they wanted, they could have arrested these three guys and charged them and give them a due legal process instead of executing them on the spot just on the basis of their suspicion. What is the legal here? What is the legal system here? Israel can now say about anybody that he's a Hamas terrorist or a terrorist or anything else, and then kill him in the street. And nobody will condemn that. United States of America has no right not to condemn this action. And it is unacceptable that they continue to use double standard because they don't want to criticize Israel. Why? Because they know that they are participating with Israel in what could be perceived or condemned as an act of genocide by supplying Israel with weapons, by supplying Israel with soldiers even. They're supplying Israel with advisors in its terrible attacks on Gaza. And on the other hand, Gaza, Israel has been continuously persistent in attacking all hospitals, not only in Gaza, but also in the West Bank. They have subjected Tulkarem hospitals to attacks. They've subjected Jenin hospitals to attacks. They've subjected hospitals in Nablus to attacks. And they continue to do that in Gaza, where they're bombarding the hospitals, killing patients, killing doctors, killing nurses. And add to that the fact that Israel has killed in Gaza up till now 304 of our colleagues, medical doctors, nurses, first aid providers. In addition, they injured 300 others while they were performing their medical duties. And they have arrested 90 of these health workers, including the director of Shifa Hospital, who is subjected now to torture in Israeli concentration camp in the Negev near Beersheba. This is the exact behavior of Israel. Do we hear any condemnation from the United States of America or from the United Kingdom? No. All the condemnation, all the punishment, all the collective punishment is directed only at one people, which are the Palestinian people. We don't understand how could these countries that claim that they are struggling, that they claim they support human rights, they claim they support democracy, they claim they support international law, and at the same time, not only they are allowing these crimes to happen against the Palestinians, but they are actually participating in them. That's what's happened in Jenin, like what's happening now in Gaza, where, by the way, 32,000 Palestinians have been killed so far, if we include the 7,000 under the rubble, and more than 65,000 people have been injured. That is more than 4% of the population of Gaza. Had this happened in the United States of America, you would be talking about 12 million people killed or injured in less than 3 months. Proportionally, the number of Palestinians killed in Gaza after 3 months is more than all Americans killed in all America's wars since the 18th century. Is that acceptable? Is that allowable? That is the question that should be directed to Biden administration and to the American administration. How could they continue to allow Israel to be so impunitive to international law? And how could they allow this act of collective punishment against the Palestinian population when it comes to UNRWA and other health humanitarian services? By the way, the International Court of Justice decided there should be support to providing humanitarian supplies to Palestinians, and Israel should be responsible for that. What do we see in reality now in Gaza? I've been talking to our 30 medical teams working there. They say there is a decline in the amount of support that is coming in an unprecedented manner. What they get is absolutely not enough, less than 100 trucks daily, while what they need is 1,000 trucks daily, considering the terrible situation. We have people in the north and in the center of Gaza who are calling us saying they are starving, they have no food, they have no medical supplies. Our colleagues had to operate on people, injured people without anesthesia. And 600,000 people, according to the World Food Program now, 600,000 Palestinians now in Gaza are starving. What does the United States of America do about that? Do they do anything? Or just protect Israel and provide protection for this Israeli aggression?
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, we want to ask if you can stay with us till after break. We're going to talk about that conference that took place in Israel. Almost a third of the Israeli cabinet was there. A number of the cabinet members addressed the conference, calling for the Israeli resettlement of Gaza. We're talking to Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, and politician, who serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative. We'll also be joined by a reporter for 972 magazine, Oren Ziv, will join us from Tel Aviv. He covered the conference of thousands of Israelis. Back in 20 seconds. لساني عربي كان عاني غرضي إنساني أنا آسف إني بغني وإخواتي بتعاني أنا ضد ركوب الموجة بس دي أقل حاجة قدامي إن أنقل ولاد جيلي شيء من الوعي ولو في أغاني الخريطة اللي في زماني كيوردز للحقيقة والمعاني مش هداري لمعاني بكلمك من مصر أم الدنيا بنت النيل فانت فاهم أنا بأمين مش هتفرق أنهي جيل انت ضد الإنسانية اتقل لا لقيت القافية دي في نيلي ده جوجل كلمة يري ده وبرغم الدمار الورد يعيش الوقت يعيد جوجل عب وهاب بسيري وإدوارد سعيد في حاجة اسمها مقاومة وحاجة اسمها إرهاب في حاجة اسمها صهيوني غير يهودي ابن كتاب أرض الله أساسها الجيرة والسلام في كره في دنا The Land of Canaan by Ghanani. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thousands of Israelis gathered in Jerusalem Sunday for a major conference calling for Palestinians to be removed from Gaza in order to rebuild Jewish settlements. The conference, organized by the settler group Nahalah, was dubbed Settlement Brings Security and Victory, was attended by almost a third of the Israeli cabinet. Among the most high-profile speakers was Israel's public security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir.
Today, everyone already understands that fleeing brings war, and that if you don't want another 7th of October, you have to return home to control the territory.
Speakers at the conference called for the Israeli settlement of Gaza and the continued expansion of settlements in the West Bank. Another prominent speaker on Sunday's conference was Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich.
We are settling our land from width to length, controlling it and fighting terror always, and bringing, with God's help, security to all of Israel. You know what the answer is. Without settlement, there is no security.
For more, we go to Tel Aviv, where we're joined by Oren Ziv, a reporter and photographer for Plus 972 magazine, who covered the settler conference in Jerusalem on Sunday. His piece is headlined, Turning Zaytun into Shivat Zion. Israeli summit envisions Gaza resettlement. Staying with us is Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, speaking to us from Ramallah. Oren, why don't you start off by just describing this conference, the significance of it, and what shocked you most as you covered it?
Thank you for having me, first of all. I have to say this is the last event in a series of events and protests of the settler movement calling to what they say is going back to Gaza, returning to the settlements that were evicted by Israel in the 2005 disengagement. This event was significant because thousands of people took part in it in West Jerusalem. They gathered in a big hall. I could say half of the participants were youth or college students, and you had mostly religious right-wing settlers. There, at the entrance, you had a big map, a huge map, showing the different settlements they plan to establish in the Gaza Strip, some of them literally on top of Palestinian villages and towns that exist and, of course, unfortunately, were destroyed by the Israeli aggression in the recent months. Inside the hall, we had speeches of, as you said, ministers, parliament members. Four out of five of the representative of four out of five of the parties that are in the coalition of Netanyahu's government were there, 11 ministers and 15 parliament members. So, big support from the government and also settlers, leaders and activists. For me, personally, the most shocking thing was not only the plan to establish the settlements, but the fact the people there were dancing and singing, being happy and joyful. And this is important to understand that in the Israeli public atmosphere, this is something you barely see since the attack of 7th of October. You don't see public events where people are joyful, not because, you know, most of the Israeli public ignore the horrific reality in Gaza, but because of the war, because of the attack of 7th of October, because of Israeli soldiers are being killed every day in the war. You don't see many of those events. And it shocked even mainstream Israelis to see ministers and people who take those decisions regarding their dancing. Was very shocking for many people. And I think this is because while the vast or big parts of the Israeli public is still in shock, the settler movement see this war as an opportunity to expand their plans to settle in Gaza.
And Oren, I wanted to ask you, apparently the British Foreign Minister David Cameron, some reports are saying, reacting to this conference over the weekend, reaffirmed Britain's position that there must be a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I'm wondering your thoughts about how some of these Western countries continue to support the war in Gaza, and while maintaining that the two-state solution that they know the Israeli government has made clear it has no intention of following through on.
Yes, I think this conference made it very clear, because ahead of the hearing in The Hague, the ICJ hearing, official Israel, Netanyahu and other members of the more the center kind of part of the government tried to portray a picture that Israel will not stay in Gaza, will not set in Gaza this temporary war. And this event and the participant of senior members of the government makes it very clear that A, they don't want any two-state solution, but this we've seen over the years. But more importantly, that they don't care about the international law. They don't care about the ICJ procedure. It doesn't threaten them to continue to express those opinions. One could think that after ministers and the prime minister itself were quoted in the South African appeal to the court, these were the evidence, actually, what the Israeli politician, the genocidal discourse they were promoting in the beginning of the war, one could think they would be a bit more careful. But the opposite. This was not, it's important to mention, this was not only a conference talking about settling in Gaza. It was very clear, and most of the speakers talked about the what they call is the call as the encouraging immigration or forcing people from Gaza. So it's very clear that the settlement movement is on the account of the residents of Gaza. Daniela Weiss, one of the settlers' leader who was leading the conference, when we asked her what would happen to the Palestinians if your plans come true, she said they would leave, they would have to leave, we don't give them food, we don't give them water. She was talking about the siege, and she said they would leave, they would have to spend around the world. Also, Minister Ben-Gvir, who was a bit more careful in his language, said we have to encourage immigration from Gaza. So this was a consensus in the conference.
Aaron, we just played a clip of Bezalel Smotrich, who's a cabinet member. I'm looking at a Times of Israel article that says, from a few years ago, that the former Shin Bet deputy chief, Yitzhak Ilan, he was the former deputy head of Shin Bet Security Service, reportedly told a political gathering that Smotrich was a Jewish terrorist who planned to blow up cars on a major highway during the 2005 Gaza disengagement when the Israeli settlers were forced out by Israel of Gaza. Can you talk about the significance of this today, almost 20 years later? Who Smotrich is. He was held for 3 weeks, questioned by Shin Bet, ultimately wasn't charged. Apparently, they didn't want to endanger their sources, who talked about him being found with massive amounts of gasoline.
Yes, this is true. Smotrich was a security prisoner. He was suspected in that, but not convicted. But this shows us, together with Ben-Gvir, that I personally documented and saw him attacking Palestinian, attacking Israeli left-wing activists along the years before he became a parliament member and a minister. So these are is people that are well known from the right-wing extreme activities. And unfortunately today, they decide the policies. They lead Israel. And I think this is why also Netanyahu and kind of the more center-right part of the government cannot say this is not official Israel, this is not an official line, because we've seen Netanyahu ahead of the ICJ, and we've seen other speakers of Israel saying, well, there are ministers, there are parliament members, but they're not in the war cabinet, they don't take the decision. This is, of course, just rhetoric to protect Israel from being accountable. I think when we see such a big number of ministers, senior ministers, and parliament members taking part in this conference that is callingly open to transfer, to displace Palestinians from Gaza. And maybe more important, I think this discourse, it's important to say, also encouraged soldiers on the ground, right-wing soldiers, settler soldiers, or just ordinary soldiers, that hear this rhetoric on Israeli mainstream media, on social media, it encourages them to carry out war crimes. The war itself is horrific enough, but I'm afraid that this rhetoric by members of the government encourages or gives the feeling to the soldiers on the ground they can do anything, because if Israel, according to this conference, will eventually control the Gaza Strip, it means soldiers on the ground, and we've seen that on TikTok, on Instagram, social media, can do whatever they want because it belongs to Israel. So they can explode houses, they can vandalize, they can steal property, they can do whatever they want because this eventually will be Israeli property.
I'd like to bring Dr. Mustafa Barghouti back into the conversation. Doctor, your reaction to this conference and to this these post-invasion plans of the of a good portion of the Israeli government.
The Ben-Gvir and Smotrich are known to be fascists, of course, and sometimes they are described as psychopaths, but they're not really only psychopaths. They are the ones who are deciding the Israeli government policy. And none of their statements, fascist statements, was ever negated by Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel. And these guys are representing what can be called Jewish religious extreme fundamentalism combined with Jewish supremacy thinking. And they believe that the whole of the land of Palestine and Jordan as well, and parts of Saudi Arabia and Syria are supposed to be Jewish land. And these guys are practically repeating, confirming actually what had happened in 1948 when Israel, as a settler colonial project, committed 50 massacres against Palestinians and evicted people from 520 communities and then erased them to the ground. They want to repeat what Israel did in 1948, another Nakba against Palestinian people. And they are speaking openly about three war crimes simultaneously: the war crime of ethnic cleansing, the war crime of collective punishment, and the war crime of genocide. They want to evict everybody from Gaza. And that's, by the way, what Netanyahu himself called for in the very first days of this war. That's what Gallant called for when he said that Palestinians are human animals and should be treated as such. And what you've seen in this conference, this is not just a bunch of extremists. It's the government, the Israeli government. 12 ministers of the Israeli government attended that meeting and supported it. 15 members of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, attended it. So you are talking here practically about the official Israeli policy, which is directed at ethnic cleansing of Palestinians and then settlements, not only in Gaza. As a matter of fact, also in the West Bank, we are now subjected to settlers' terror, which has evicted already 30 Palestinian communities from their land, from their homes, in the West Bank. 60% of the West Bank is now practically forbidden for Palestinians and is allocated to the Israeli settlers. And we don't have to go far. All you need to do is to show the map that Netanyahu has shown in the United States, in the United Nations, 2 weeks before the war in Gaza. He showed the map of Israel, including the annexation of all of the West Bank, all of Gaza Strip, and all of the Golan Heights. What everybody must understand, that this is the Israeli official government policy. And that's why it has to be punished. That's why it has to be sanctioned, and that's why it has to be exposed. And Israel cannot be allowed to continue to be absolutely unaccountable to international law and absolutely imperative to international law.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian physician, activist, and politician. We also want to thank Oren Zeev in Tel Aviv, reporter and photojournalist with Plus972 magazine. That does it for our show. We have a job opening at Democracy Now!, major gifts officer. Learn more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hey, are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.